In this talk, I want to focus in on a project that that's ongoing to try to address one of the problems that I mentioned in my talk yesterday that has received some attention but not enough, I think. Which is timing attacks. Timing attacks have a long history. Timing channel analysis kind of started out way back in the 80s in the context of military-grade systems where you wanted to impose mandatory access control that would prevent information leakage from, say, top secret to unclassified levels, even if, say, there's a Trojan in the secret part that's trying to leak data. The interest has kind of so that's still an issue, especially with new information IFC type designs, but also a newer set of kind of non-cooperative attacks have appeared where, you know, we don't assume that the victim is actually compromised by a Trojan, but it might just accidentally broadcast important information like keys through timing channels. And so kind of the typical cooperative example again is you know, we have a protection boundary enforced by mandatory access control, and a Trojan wants to try to leak information. It can't get through the ordinary protection boundary, so instead it, you know, waves a flag by saying, you know, using a little CPU or using a lot of CPU to in a particular time period to transmit one bit, and the other side says, okay, how fast am I running? You know, and you know, if this is a shared CPU, statistically multiplexed, then this is a real easy, you know, timing channel. So you know, it's a, you know, the trivial obvious case. There's lots of more subtle cases. There are also non-cooperative attacks where the secret system is just running some well-known algorithm compiled by a well-known version of GCC or whatever, and it kind of accidentally uses the cache, for example, or other processor resources in ways that a passive attacker can actually monitor by looking at the, you know, cache access timings to figure out, you know, which cache lines the AES implementation has been hitting and stuff like that. And so this is obviously much harder, there are different issues involved. But the point is, you know, both kinds of timing attacks exist and are issues in different contexts. And I've argued before that timing attacks, you know, might become an especially difficult problem in the cloud for these four reasons, which I'm not going to reiterate. If you're interested in that, go back to my CCSW10 paper. But the most important one for our purposes now is the fourth one, namely the classic defenses against timing attacks basically defeat the cloud's elasticity, the business model that underlines a lot of cloud computing. And so the question I want to ask now is, well, we have all this kind of newly repopularized IFC work lately that's you know, really interesting and promising. It's been implemented in decentralized forms in different kind of experimental trusted IFC enforcing kernels and things, and you know, they know how to label processes or you know, variables at language level versions and stuff. But so far, most of this work kind of avoids the timing channel issue. It just says, you know, we don't deal with timing channels, and it's kind of easy to see why. You know, how does one attach labels to time? You know, and even if we could, what do we do with these timing labels? You know, we can't tell a program to stop taking time, and it's even hard to, you know, tell a program to stop taking a variable amount of time depending on what it's doing, you know, which is kind of what it sounds like we're proposing to do. But the question is, can we get around these challenges and actually extend IFC models to deal with timing analysis and to be able to provide a way to constrain timing channels. And my sense is that we can't. And so I'm going to just briefly sketch kind of a very high level the informal way of that we're trying to think about timing analysis, timing information flow control. So the basic idea to start with is that we now need to attach labels to two different types of things, not just one. So in IFC systems, already attach labels to content, to variables, process state, files, message, and that typically represents the ownership or the taint, who might own information that affected the contents of this variable or the memory in this process. Now we're going to create a new type of labels that we attach to events, essentially. And a time label is going to be basically represent who might own or have tainted the information that affected when this event occurred. Kind of a straightforward idea, right? And it could be affect either the time a one-shot event occurred, or as you'll see, we're going to try to reason about labels in terms of representing the rate at which information might leak through a repeating series of events or a channel that in which events occur at some regularity. And so this is what I'm talking about when I say timing information flow control. It's basically IFC plus timing labels. To try to make this a little more, just to kind of set things up with an example, what does this mean in the cloud, or what might this mean? In a cloud context, I just want to kind of throw out this high-level picture at what I envision this might eventually translate to, or what the eventual goal might be. So a cloud provider wants to create kind of a timing-hardened cloud, a cloud in which customers can receive a stronger guarantee that one customer won't be able to use timing channels to steal confidential data or keys from another customer, right? And so we're going to kind of we're going to need to address this in two ways. First of all, I'm going to assume that we can assume that the cloud provider can devote some kind of physically separate or physically physically dedicated resources to each customer or to certain customers. You can kind of think of this as like co-location model. So, each customer might have one server in kind of co-location style that does nothing but serve that customer. But then kind of the bulk of the resources are going to, and we're going to, need that to actually make this model work. But the bulk of the resources are going to be kind of in this shared cloud that we would actually like to statistically multiplex as we're used to doing in the cloud. And dealing with that that lower big areas is kind of the big challenge that we're trying to address. So how do we do this? So we're starting with the IFC model from the Flume system. I don't know how many people are familiar with it, but it's just one of a number of IFC models that happens to be fairly simple and clean, which is why we're using it. And basically, the model is we have tags like Alice and Bob representing the ownership of data, and a label is just a set of tags. And then, since this is a decentralized model, we also need some way to specify how tags can be added and removed, which accounts to corresponds to classification or declassification of data. And so we have these what are called capabilities, like Alice plus or Alice minus. So if a process holds the Alice minus capability, that means the process has the power to declassify Alice's data. And there's a particular rule that dictates, you know, when one process is allowed to send data to another. Basically, the labels have to be equal, or one or both processes have to have the right set of capabilities to ensure that the declassification is allowed. So I'm not going to get into the details there, but just kind of sketch, well, how do we add timing labels to this? Now, the way, you know, I'm not going to claim this is the right way, but this is kind of the straightforward way that we're working with at the moment. We're going to say a timing tag is a regular tag augmented with a frequency, f. So for a tag a sub f indicates the labeled thing, the labeled message channel or whatever that the label is attached to, might leak Alice's information up to f bits per second at a particular rate. The tag Alice sub infinity means information can leak at an arbitrarily high rate. Now, a full label can now contain both state and timing tags, and these are kept separate. I'm going to use this slash notation where a message channel labeled A slash B sub F indicates that the bits of the messages going through this channel might be tainted with Bob's information. So this is the content, the message size, and the message content. But the arrival events, the time that the message has arrived, we're gonna separately label B sub F in this case, meaning the arrival events are tainted by B's information at up to rate up to this particular rate F. Okay. Now, I'm not going to kind of throw a bunch of equations or things like that. I want to stick to some kind of just high-level illustrative examples of like how this reasoning system applies to a system. And I'm going to start with a super trivial system in which we envision a cloud provider has two customers, and it's just going to administratively partition the compute server resources between those two customers so that, you know, one server is dedicated to one of the customers at a time. You know, this is kind of just going back to the old world, which is, you know, obvious we can do that, but this is how it kind of works in terms of a labeling sense. So we assume that each customer has kind of a dedicated gateway device that requests or jobs come in on. And this gateway has these declassification capabilities. For example, Alice's gateway can classify and declass, can add and remove the A tag. And so when a request comes in from Alice or one of Alice's customers, the gateway tags that request. In this case, it's tagging request A slash A sub infinity, which means both the content of the message of these jobs and the arrival times of the jobs can contain Alice's information at an arbitrarily high rate. This tag goes to the compute server. Of course, the compute server for Alice gets tainted with both the timing and both the state and timing tags. The result comes back similarly tainted. The gateway removes the tag and sends the result. Now, you know, and you could envision, you know, a trusted kernel running on each of those backend servers that checks these tags. I'm not going to talk about that kind of stuff right now. I'm just trying to set up the conceptual model. Now, this is totally boring. We already know how to do this. So what can we do that's more interesting? Well, actually, this isn't that yet. So just to kind of informally see, you know, why this is the case, you know, to reason about, you know, why this provides timing independence, we can envision a scenario where, Bob's behavior might change. A case where Bob's job is short versus Bob's job is long, does this leak information to Alice? In this case, it doesn't because it's running on a different machine, right? And so Alice's job runs the same amount of time. The job done, you know, is only tainted with Alice's state and timing tag. So, you know, this is obvious. I'm just trying to kind of set up the picture here. Now, just slightly more complicated, we actually want to have some real sharing now. How do we do real sharing? So the simplest way of having kind of real sharing is going to be just a demand insensitive time sharing scenario. So we want to, you know, classic kind of partitioning, but now on a time axis. And I'm going to assume there's some kind of reservation-based scheduler component. And you know, this is just, you know, a conceptual component. It could actually be physically instantiated on a physically separate server that sends control messages to this compute server that's running both of these types of jobs. Or it could be just, you know, a separate core or an interrupt handler on the server itself. I want to abstract away from that for now. But the key idea is that, you know, once again, these jobs are going to come in through the gateway, get labeled, go to the shared compute server. Now, the compute server is going to be running a trusted kernel that kind of receives control messages from this scheduler. And the scheduler, the important thing is the scheduler has a tag of empty. It has no taints, which means the control messenger, the scheduler can send messages to anybody, but basically can't receive messages from anybody who has any taint. This is just standard IFC rules. Now, the shared, which basically means the reservation scheduler tells the compute server which job to run next, but can't receive any information back from this shared compute server, say about, you know, which of Alice and Bob actually has stuff to run. So this is where the kind of demand insensitivity comes in. The IFC model disallows the scheduler from receiving demand information from the compute server because it would have to be tainted with Alice's labels or Bob's label as soon as it's executed anything. So there's a bunch of details I'm glossing over here, but that's kind of the high level idea. And once again, kind of reasoning about this in terms of different possible schedules, you know, Bob's job is short versus long. Does it leak any bits of information to Alice? Well, no, it doesn't, because on the schedule, the Alice's part of the schedule only depends on what this this scheduler component decides and the scheduler's component can't decide anything based on either Alice's or Bob's information, so the schedule remains Alice's part of the schedule, and therefore Alice's end time remains the same. So we don't, you know, but of course this is again something we can all kind of already do. It's, you know, basically another form of the standard partitioning approaches, you know, which, you know, if we end there, we're not doing very well, especially for elastic clouds. How can we actually support elastic clouds that can stat mux computations? So this is where we need two more pieces. One is a system-enforced deterministic engine execution engine. I'm not going to talk about the details here. For that, see our OSDI paper, OSDI 2010 paper. The key property it provides is that it can take a job, compute something on it, produce the output that is guaranteed to depend only on the job's inputs and not on any other implicit inputs such as time or any other non-deterministic inputs. The other thing we need is actually something very simple, just a paste queue, namely a queue that can take inputs or messages at kind of any rate whenever they arrive, but outputs jobs or messages on a particular fixed schedule, once per clock tick. And to see what we do with this, let's take a look at this final example scenario, where we again have this shared compute server in the middle there, and now it's going to run Alice's and Bob's jobs under the control of a demand sensitive scheduler that can actually learn information about the jobs, who's ready to run, who needs more resources. It can actually look at anything it wants to potentially in these computations, which means it's going to have to be tainted. So the demand scheduler is now tainted in terms of both content and timing tags with both Alice's and Bob's labels, because it's, you know, its computation is sensitive to all of this. And once again, you know, Alice's gateway is you know, labeling everything Alice, the jobs with Alice's label on the way in, but we're making the important assumption that this compute server in the middle is deterministic, which means when it produces the output of a job, the timing, the content label is still only going to be tainted with Alice. The content label does not need to be coming out of that does not need to be tainted with Bob's label, because it's deterministically computed based only on Alice's input. And this is where the state tag and the timing tag can be different. Now, on the other hand, because this stuff is scheduled based on information that mixes Alice's and Bob's dependencies together arbitrarily, the timing tags coming out of the compute server depend arbitrarily on both Alice's and Bob's time tags, and so they're kind of the timing of these results is tainted with both Alice's and Bob's information. So this is bad, because you know we would not be able to release this. But what we can do is run it through one of these pacers, and as I'll show on the next slide, that basically has the effect of reducing the rate limiting the rate at which this information can be released to at most a fixed frequency f. Now, I assume that everybody that's agreed to use this particular cloud has agreed to a common kind of declassification, timing declassification frequency. Everybody has said, okay, I'm going to run jobs on this cloud, and I agree to allow information to leak at say 1 bit per second. And so all of these gateways are given the ability to declassify timing labels up to this frequency f. And so because the pacer has reduced it, you know, the tags to that frequency, and then everybody can declassify things the rest of the way, we're out. And kind of the key component here is that for each customer's job, again, the output bits depend only on the input bits. The outputs come in the same order as the input, so the only variability in what a customer sees is at each clock tick, the paste queue either releases the next job output, which is deterministic, or says, sorry, it's not ready yet. And this is the one bit of information that might leak, say, from Bob to Alice or from Alice to Bob through timing channels. And then there's another example about how we can analyze that, which I'll skip. But basically, you know, yes, now information can leak. Bob's computation decides in this case whether Alice's result completes at tick 3 or tick 4, but it's still releasing it at most one bit per tick. So there's a lot of kind of unanswered questions, a lot of things to do here. But we're optimistic that you know these can be solved, and you know given these tools, and so you know in conclusion, I just want to kind of bring this idea to the table. You know, the question: can we extend IFC to support timing analysis and constrained timing? I think we can. I think it can deal with several approaches, both existing and novel, And I'm optimistic this might be one of the first general approaches that could actually be feasible on existing unmodified hardware and support statistically multiplexed elastic clouds. So, thank you.
Questions? Okay, so let's bring the speakers back up. Oh, we do have a question. Go ahead. Sorry. You have to jump soon.
So this seems to require a lot of assumptions about, say, deterministic execution and other things that I'm not sure I fully understand, so I won't delve into them. But have you considered the alternative of hypothesizing something like the minimum time required to establish a channel between an intruder and a target, and instituting or investigating how to assure that the minimum time of possible co-residency is no longer than or approximately the same as minimum time to create that channel or to determine that the channel exists, and simply chaotically changing co-residency on that frequency to obscure and or prevent the creation of channels adequate for communication. That would seem to have far fewer assumptions about the inherent state of the system and the system's repeatability, in my mind.
That's a good idea to look into. I haven't thought really much about that approach. My gut feel, first reaction is that, first of all, I think that and other kind of alternative approaches are very good things to explore, and I hope that a generalized timing information flow control model could actually support and kind of let us reason about a number of different approaches to timing channel control, not just the three that I kind of tossed out here now, and hopefully including that. In terms of that particular approach, what worries me is you might be replacing one set of assumptions with another. Like in this case, it sounds like you might be assuming that the attacker is going to be, to have a presence on only a few servers, whereas, what happens if the attacker actually has a small but existing presence on lots and lots of servers, so that, even as the cloud shifts things around, the victim moves from one server to another, it's still going to be it's going to move to a different server that the attacker is also monitoring. I might be misunderstanding your approach.
No, I think that's correct, but I think there's some delay in the attacker's presence on the new node becoming aware that it is now co-located.
Sure.
And it's that delay that I'm trying to
exploit.
The system full of spies waiting for the victim to show up in their neighborhood, but it takes them some amount of time to determine that the victim has arrived and that they can now start extracting or achieving even one bit of information. And if the victim moves on faster than they are able to, or about the rate at which they are able to, I understand that they are able to acquire any information, you're achieving the same end result.
Yeah, that might well work. I don't know yet, how to reason about, the rate information leaks in that case, though. So, yeah. Right. Sure.